finals of the National Pickleball League happened last weekend, and what a ride it was. In the end, it was the Outback who claimed the Season 3 title, and with it, bragging rights across the country. Today, I'm joined by the voices behind the mic all weekend long, NPL commentators Dylan Kimlin and Ash Williams, to break it all down. We'll dive into the epic final between the Outback and the Heat, take a look back at the matches that shaped the weekend, unpack some spicy moments like Book's red card, Ash's take on the turning point for each team. We'll also try and tally up just how many benches Steph and Jordic sat on throughout the finals. Big welcome to you both, Dylan and Ash. Let's get into it.
Thank you for having me.
Dylan, let's start with you. What's your recount of the whole weekend? What's the thing that sticks out for you most?
I mean, I sent an email to Ron Schell from NPL, obviously, just giving them a congratulations to the season and also the green zone. Like, the green zone, in my opinion, was incredible this season, and Ash might have his own opinions on that, but from a broadcast perspective, it was so much fun. From the finals, it was amazing to be able to bounce between different courts and just talk about them as we're going along. But yeah, across the board, great. Obviously, congratulations to the Outback and Harry Brown, Selena Troya taking the MVPs. No doubt we'll talk about that at some point, but the games were incredible. It's so many conversation pieces over the weekend. And I think the interaction this weekend was elite. So many players getting involved, giving us things to talk about. Ash and I arguing nonstop on the green zone. Like, it was just so much fun to be involved with.
Ash, your commentary well and truly added a lot of value. I know how much you like giving your opinion. What was the highlights for you, mate?
Well, mate, it's more that I just don't have the energy to lie. Like, you're doing an 8-hour broadcast for 3 days consecutively. You've got to be honest. You've got to call a spade, at least I have to anyway. And I also like taking DK into some shark-infested waters, pardon the pun, shout out to Zach Grab. And we have a bit of a splash around out there. And I think the great thing about our discussions is that they were very, very to the point. They were honest. And we went into some interesting areas and hopefully entertaining.
Well, Ash, you did take Dylan into some very deep water when you started talking about the Opals. He really opened up and we audibly heard it through the commentary. Remember that chat?
Oh, of course I do. I mean, I hope DK does. You know, it's very rare that I think to myself, geez, DK, pump the brakes. But look, that was refreshing. And again, it's just about answering questions honestly. If the sport is going to grow, then, you know, you just need to be able to speak openly.
Well, mate, I want to go into a segment with you and Dylan. You're off the hook here because this is right up Ash's alley. It's going to be, I knew it was over when. So I want you to go through team by team with me. We're going to start at the bottom and work our way all the way up to the winner. So are you ready?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm going to, like any other good commenting or commentating duo, I'm going to need the help of DK. Because DK, don't think you're getting out of this one lightly. I think I'll do one and DK can do one because he knows pickleball better than anyone. And I want to get his thoughts too.
Okay. I think you're just got the stick out at the moment, just stirring the pot big time, which I love.
Adam, I haven't actually done any homework on your questions. So I just had a bit of time to think and I can't cover all 18.
I'm just about to get out my phone and say, I sent you this text about 3 hours ago, just after I finished a hit, and it said, hey, make it punchy, make it edgy. But anyway, let's get into it. I'll go to you, Phil.
Oh, sorry, Adam. I do have a life apart from being a guest on the Slam Jam podcast. Sorry, mate. I haven't just been sitting here twiddling my thumbs for 3 hours.
Jeez, Melbourne coffee culture. That's what it sounds like. All right, let's go. I knew it was over for the Adders when, Ash.
Well, I'm not meant to comment on the Adders, Adam. I was pretty forthright on the Adders on their Friday playoff day. And some members of the Adders didn't take kindly to that. And I think perhaps those people maybe should think about if they want to play pro pickleball, because it's not just on the court, it's off the court. And if you're vying for $100,000, then there is going to be commentary on the sport. In saying that, I will give you a comment on the Adders. I knew it was over. I don't know. DK, what do you think?
He's already got me out in the deep water, Adam. How's that hand pass, mate?
Hospital hand pass.
I was digging up.
Now, obviously, I try to be the good cop out of the two, Adam, so I'll start us lightly. I mean, the Adders were third place team for their region, so they already had it tough.
Yep.
the Adders got through in a bit of a crazy situation. So you had the 29ers, the Roos, and the Tide. The Sharks were there, and the Adders were there. So it was pretty crazy in round five to get into these finals. So you got to know a little bit of the situation before we delve into 2D. But for the Adders, I think on paper they have a pretty solid team. They probably, it's almost like, oh, we've been given this gift. Like, I don't think they necessarily locked in. We saw some of the teams on the weekend. I mentioned this on the broadcast to Ash. They just looked serious the whole time. Whereas the Adders, I don't know if they necessarily had that when the finals started. And I think it's because of the situation that they got into finals that sort of set this up mentally. I could be wrong, but that's just how I perceived it.
Yeah, that's a fair shout that they played in round five against the Roos. Even mathematically, we thought it was impossible for the Roos to miss out, and somehow they did. Then there was even some question whether the Adders were going to finish second. On one of the ladders, they were second. On the official ladder, the Tide were second and the Adders were third, meaning they had to play the playoffs. Look, all conditions remaining the same. The Bandicoots were the full list. They beat the Adders. But look, to answer your question, Adam, I think it was over for the Adders before the finals even began. There's no way they were going to go anywhere. They just don't have the depth. They don't have the intensity. And you need the intensity across the whole team list. It can't be just one superstar. It can't be Tom Evans. You need intensity, talent, a want to win, and that team chemistry. And they just didn't have that. So the Stingers made them look pretty ordinary in that final on Saturday morning.
Well, let's move to Queensland then. I knew it was over for the Burras when?
I'm going to say when Vuk Veličević decided to go beast mode. I knew that he was going to... I actually spoke to Vuk yesterday, and he said that he wanted to get under the skin of some players, and that's when Vuk's at his best. And I think he was poking and prodding Brandon Contrado. And once he got Contrado on the hook, his boy took the bait and Vuk cut him up. I even heard that Summer Della Bonner was telling Brandon not to get involved with Vuk. So, yeah, that's when it was over for the Burras, when Vuk got involved.
Dylan, I knew it was over for the 29ers when?
Ash and I brought this conversation piece up on the broadcast. Do you, in the NPL format, would you rather have a superstar versus an all-round team? And we talked about it in length. By the way, the Green Zone had some amazing discussion points I want to point out. Just the broadcast in general was so good in that regard. Obviously, Tom Evans, one of the best in the country, moving to the States, wants to go out on a farewell tour, like a good news story, but they didn't do well. Now, the gentleman, obviously the combination of Evans and Kuznetsov together, is strong. Memory up-and-coming good player. Green, obviously very experienced player as well. I just don't think they had the all-round firepower that was required for this. Like, you look at the Outback, who won it. They had just an all-round great team. So it's very interesting to see whether captains follow this train of thought for our next season.
All right, Ash, this is the big one. I knew it was over for the Brumbies when?
Okay. Well, I'm going to say when I got a full look at their list. I mean, I probably haven't seen enough of the Brumbies. There was some inclement weather in Queensland. Then we unfortunately couldn't get our eyes on the Brumbies as much as we would have liked. But yeah, I just feel like everyone needed to play super well. And I think as soon as I saw that Lindsay Baker was a bit off and Joey Wild maybe wasn't as Joey as he usually is, that they were going to struggle. The heat in that qualifying final made them look not like the Brumbies. And then I think it was the 29ers who beat the Brumbies. Who would have thought they'd go out in straight sets? I mean, that was one of the biggest stories of the final series. Highly fancied. Joey Wild and his Brumbies just going out like that. I knew pretty early. And DK, you touched on that too, that you didn't think Joey looked right.
Yeah, I agree, Ash. I did mention on the Green Zone that I've covered Joey for quite a long time now in his career, and he's one of the best in the country. But he almost looked, I don't know, he just didn't look 100%. It's probably the easiest way of putting it. You know, you look at the team on paper, like Lindsay Baker, finals MVP of last season, Joey Wild, obviously one of the best in Australia. And those two specifically, I don't think fired to the level that we expect. And, you know, we're entering a crazy world now where there's expectations. If you are a top three player in Australia, we expect the top three performance. Tom Evans, 29ers, didn't get it done. Joey Wild and the Brumbies didn't get it done. Now, where do we go from here regarding that discussion? Well, that's probably up to the public opinion. But Joey's a superstar. We know he'll bounce back. There's also the negative connotation of this of, you know, a failed season as a captain. What does this do? Because I imagine to Joey, this is a failed season. I don't know what you guys think, but he's just of that caliber. Same as Townsend. That's why I brought up the Opals earlier. Like, they, to them, this is a failed season. How do they bounce back? I think that's going to be a very interesting train of thought to look at.
I wonder, you know, Lindsay Baker came in highly fancied, finals MVP from season two, really dominated. And I think, have we overrated Lindsay Baker? You know, I think the talent pool and the standard of NPL season three is so much higher. We've seen the inclusion of PPA superstars in Selena Troia, Summer Della Bonna, et cetera. And has Lindsay been able to match that standard? At the moment, no. I thought that she might be able to. I thought she might be able to go toe-to-toe and really fire at the jar where we know she plays high-quality pickle, but she couldn't fire. So, yeah, there's a bit of a watch on Lindsay Baker.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, boys, I think you're right in that she didn't look on. And I know that what you're saying, Ash, is you didn't get a reasonable enough look at them, but... You know, like if I was to pinpoint a female pairing that should have gone further who were playing finals, you'd have to come back to the Burras, Zara Dennehy and Summer Della Bonna. And the Brumbies ended up, by virtue of their starting point in the finals, they got the double chance. It'd been interesting to see on the day if the Burras and Brumbies were to play each other, who would come out on top. You should have to say the female pairing of the Burras is more supreme than the Brumbies. But in the end, they both just failed.
On that, Adam, I think it really depends on the gender doubles, who plays first, the men or the women. We saw Joey and Caden Hansel win 11 love against the Heat. And this was the turning point. Actually, this is when I knew it was over for the Brumbies, when Joey Wild and Caden Hansel were 11 love up, handing the baton to the women and the gender doubles, and they lost. That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, well, that's pretty unequivocal there, to be honest. Well, let's go with first, second, third, fourth, because obviously we do have winners, the runner-up, and then third and fourth have a playoff. Fourth was the Tide. So I knew it was over for the Tide when, Dylan Kimlin?
The Tide, ironically, I found them quite similar to the 29ers. So their season without Vuk is a completely different tale. I think Vuk Veličević, assuming he takes pickleball seriously, like I barely know the guy, but it seems to me like he's got priorities elsewhere. He is the new villain of Australian pickleball. So Zach, there was obviously a lot of media around him. Personally, I would just love to see Zach just quietly achieve next season. Just go about the business. Let Vuk take the negative limelight. Because Ash said there, like he was trying to get in the headspace of Brendan Contrado. We saw him with Kyron Lavers, where he was just talking smack the whole time. I like this. We need a villain who can back it up on court. There's people that talk smack off the court, don't achieve anything. Vuk Veličević actually goes about it the right way. So I think almost having a heel in pickleball, that's what Vuk is. The Tide without Vuk, you know, they were what, bottom of the ladder, Ash? So I never really had much currency in the Tide because of that. They just didn't have the all-round firepower. I found that it's ironic that it's Helena and Tom, but their teams were very similar in that regard.
Yeah.
Ash?
And yeah, just doubling down on what DK said, I love what Vuk brings. He's unapologetic. He understands the fight on and off the court, and he backs it up with his pickleball. And, you know, he's fast becoming my favorite player. In fact, he might be my favorite player. And yeah, I'm not sure if there's too much love lost between the two big balls of Australian pickleball in Vuk and Zach. So, yeah, the two alphas, I'm not sure if they're sending each other a Christmas card, but watch that space. And in answer to your question, when did I know it was over for the Tide? When Ethan Butson lost to Ben Perfuri. That was a key singles match. Ethan, really, if he was worth his salt, wins that easily. Ben Perfuri also, anyone who knows Ben knows he's a character. I think he had not two, not three, quite a lot to drink, which is fine. Some people play better like that. Shout out to Kyle Stoker. Ethan should have won that, and that's when I knew the tide were done.
Dylan, I thought you brought up a very wise, highly observational point during the commentary that Ethan, in that singles encounter and for the duration of the fixture against the Stingers we're talking about, he had too many people in his ear on the bench.
Yep.
Talk us through that.
Look, influence in pickleball is such an interesting topic because we have a bunch of players who might not necessarily have been a professional in another space. Now, we'll use Vuk as an example. We'll use Caden Hansel as an example. These two have been professionals in other spaces, so they don't give a damn. You can try and give them feedback, and obviously Caden would listen to a Joey Wild, for example. But they go about their own business because they're not influenced by other people's decisions. There are so many young players in our scene that are negatively influenced. You obviously know how to play pickleball. Go back whatever your team process is. Now, Ash and I talked about this. The Heat, the entire weekend, had a really good vibe. They looked like they were having a lot of fun. They were out there, you know, just enjoying themselves. Got to finals, it all collapsed. And there was a bunch of people in the Heat bench. Real talk, captains, tell them to piss off. If you've got people just feeding you nonsense, they shouldn't be there. It doesn't matter who they are, whether it's your family member, a friend, if they're not a pickleball that's hired as a coach, by the way, every team should have a coach. Straight up, every team should have a coach. For reasons like this. It doesn't matter whether it's NPL, MLPA, any other team format, All-Stars even. Every team should have a coach. Some sort of leadership, because if the entire team is following a train of thought and someone's vision for the team, whether it's good or bad, it's better than not following anything at all. And I do think that there were too many voices in some of the booths. This is something next season that everyone can probably improve on.
Well, I think some captains may take note of that. Ash, just back to you, last one on the Tide. Was it not over for the Tide when Vuk got a red card?
Yeah, but that was for a bronze. So there was already, in effect, null and void. But yeah, that really should have been, it's actually a good conversation piece. Shouldn't have been a red card. And if it was a red card, shouldn't have been a default for the whole rubber. Vuk, I spoke to him yesterday. Like I said, he thought he was done when he hit Mark Taylor, the referee, accidentally.
Is that confirmed?
Yep. Vuk told me he hit him.
Okay.
And obviously accidental. Is there a referee usually standing there? No. And there were two referees on the court, but Vuk thought he was done. So when he was given just a red card for that particular match, he was very appreciative.
Well, he lost that game, right? So that was his penalty. It wasn't an ejection from the whole match. That game was done. And fortunately, I guess you could say that wasn't the match over because they could still play on and potentially win. But do you think the right thing happened there?
Look, I think it was probably the right call, you know, somewhere in the middle. We've seen, depending on the referee, didn't something happen in the PPA where the referee got hit and nothing happened? So I think big moment like that split the difference, but it would be good to have a bit of a binary rule on that. And is there such a thing as a red card? I mean, I kept getting these anonymous messages from a pickleball pundit saying, no, there is no such thing as a red card. But DK, you disagreed with that.
Not necessarily a red card, but there's technical faults and technical warnings. Once again, Ash and I talked about this, Adam. Go and do your level one course, guys. Like, if you're a professional player, you should know the bloody rules. It's not that hard. But regarding my opinion on whether he should have been turfed, I think, and once, like, we look at other sports. So, you know, rugby, they've got a sin bin, which in my opinion, this is kind of like a sin bin situation. So they kind of, there's a minor penalty. In soccer or football, however you refer to it, a red card is you're done. To me, we followed the sin bin option for this particular match. But personally, I think if the referee board really want to enforce sanctioning, to me, you either go hard or you don't even bother. If someone mucks up vehemently, the game's done. The entire match has to be done. because I think half-assing it, that's almost, once again, using a soccer term, that's a yellow card. It's not a full sanction, is it? So players probably have different opinions on that, but just don't be an asshole on court.
All right, let's move on. I knew it was over for the Stingers.
When Kyle Stoker did his shoulder.
When did that exactly happen?
It was in the men's doubles, which I think was versus the Brumbies on Saturday afternoon. Okay.
Might have been gendered. Either way, yeah. He went for a smash and threw his shoulder out. Kyle just trying to hit the ball too hard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was the gendered. It was an air swing, effectively, and he just jarred his shoulder. But I think he was behind the eight ball for most of Sunday. Would have been pretty sore and sorry Sunday night.
All right, well, let's get to our runner-up. I knew it was over for the Heat. When?
I've got that. I don't want to bring up the elephant in the room, but when Nancy and Selena lost the gender doubles to Crystal and Horsley, yeah, there's no coming back from that.
There was a distinct momentum shift there, mate, so I don't think you're being too harsh in bringing that to anyone's attention. Dylan, what about you?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And from a team morale perspective, they looked shattered. I brought it up on the broadcast. There was a period of time when both Nancy and Selena were on the bench and their hands were just in their heads like that. And the game is still going. So once again, talking about each team should have a coach, it's for reasons like this, because your captain is obviously there not only to individually perform well, but they're your driving person behind the morale, motivation of the team. And Selena obviously had an MVP, not only as a state, but a finals MVP performance this weekend. But captaincy is a different thing. And I agree with Ash that I think that particular moment, everything crumbled because the Heat had fantastic morale all weekend. And unfortunately, it blew out and we got the result.
Also on that, you talk about the bench, and this might seem innocuous enough, but Stefan, I don't want to bring him up, but there were three seats and you've got all the members of the team sitting in the seats, but Stefan was sitting on one of the seats. So it's a really bad game of musical chairs. And when Nancy and Selena lost the gender doubles, where did Selena sit? Selena sat next to Mickey Hyatt because there wasn't room for her on the team bench. So the team was literally fractured from that point on. DK touched on it, for a team that had such good unity all weekend and were really the best family unit, they had a divorce in that family after that gender doubles.
Yeah, well, they certainly had momentum swings, didn't they? I mean, knocking off the Brumbies in their first qualifying final was big. I personally didn't expect that, and I made my prediction known towards that. And then the momentum shift in that girls' gender doubles match was extraordinary, and full credit has to go to Bea and Crystal Mildwaters for literally changing the stacking that they were doing mid-match before reverting back. Like, just take us through that, Ash. Like, when it was going on, could you sense it?
Well, yeah, they called a timeout. And we talk about the right people being on your bench. Chris Baum, who is close to Bea Horsley, I'm not sure if it was his call, but I'm going to say it was. He advised Crystal and Bea to swap sides. It worked wonders for them. And so, I mean, yeah, someone like Chris is worth having on the bench if he's going to provide some really timely and constructive feedback.
Do you think that was the moment that really clinched the trajectory that the Outbacks take out season three, that gender doubles female matchup?
I think for me personally, it was the team composition. So the one thing the Outback had that no one else had was pure adaptability. So we saw in the game previous, Harrison Brown was playing on the right, Nicky Mao was playing on the left. And we have this example where Crystal and Bea can rotate. And this is where, you know, you talk to dipshits from other sports that don't necessarily understand the strategic element of pickleball, okay? There's so much technical know-how in the sport, and we saw this here. So them playing team pickleball got them the result. And I think that's something that's going to be so pivotal next season. It was a just very intelligent switch. Credit to Nicky Mao to finish that match off that you're referring to. That Ash and I did say multiple times in the Heat Outback battle that there were three effective matches where the Heat had to win it, and it didn't go their way. And as a result, the Outback got it done. But you are right. There is an element. Nicky Mao, he was a closer. Ash and I talked about it on the weekend, the NPL has a weird change to pickleball in that the second picks are essential, and also you've got starters and closers. And Nicky Mao in this instance was a closer.
Some colourful language there from Dylan, Ash. Dip ships from other sports.
No, I'm loving this new DK. We're going to have to come with a language warning. But look, I think, yeah, we've got to give Nicky Mao his flowers. It was 4-love down against Ben Perfuri. He did have to close it out. They can be really tough matches to win. There was lots of pressure. And, yeah, we talk about the Outback being a superstar team and having adaptability. But what they also have is a superstar in Harry Brown, who can take care of the superstar in other teams like Tom Evans. They really had everyone beaten in a game of noughts and crosses. So, yeah, what a team. They could go down, depending on how the draft goes moving forward, they could go down as the best ever NPL team.
At the big call, Dylan, your memory is better than probably Ash's. I'm going to bring forward a team, you know, season one, you had Tom, Helena, Zach, all in the same team. I think the way that came about from memory, Tom was captain, Helena was vice captain, and then they somehow got the first pick and got Zach potentially. That was a super team, but I'm hearing what you're saying, Ash. It is a formidable team. The most cohesive unit in finals was without a doubt the Outback.
Do we really count that team of the Jalapenos season one? I feel like that was the all-Australian team. Like it was a bit unfair for mine.
Hang on. We all love our footy. Are you saying that was Ron and David's Nepo baby?
Yeah. Shout out to the Gold Coast Suns and Ron and the boys down there. Yeah, that's a big-time Nepo baby.
I'm glad you did bring up Harry Brown just then, mate, because take us through. Not only did he knock off Tom Evans in their encounter, he also knocked off Kyle Stoker. He didn't get a shot at Vuk. Now, there was a lot of love for Vuk by you, Ash, on the commentary, a lot, you know. Between you and Steph, I'm not sure who fluffs him up more. But if you were to put some money on Harry Brown versus Vuk.
Oh, geez, what a match that is. That got me a bit excited just thinking about it. Look, I'm going to have to go for big. Well, can I just call him by his real name, the concussion? I'm going for the concussion by knockout, because I think he'll get in the head of the young lion in Harry Brown. Harry Brown, super talented, super agile, but does he engage in the bait that Vuk will throw his way? That's what will decide who wins.
Dylan, we had the fortunate pleasure of actually witnessing Harry Brown at the Australian Pickleball Championships last year on the Gold Coast in that final against Tom Evans, where he actually took a game. And before that, Harry Brown was just this kid who went to college in the States and came back and started playing pickleball. And we were all flabbergasted that he took that game off Tom Evans. So this is not a flash in the pan from Harry Brown. He's won last year in the NPL as well. He's had a fabulous start to this year. Don't forget, he played in the Australian Open event where he's pocketed 10K from that. He's now pocketed 12.5, add another 2.5 for getting MVP. What's the rest of the year look like, do you reckon, for Harry Brown?
Well, it's interesting you bring up APC, because I think we as commentators have the pleasure of experiencing a player's breakout moment. So I think for APC, that was Harrison Brown's moment, because he pushed Tom and everyone was like, okay, this guy can play. We see it all the time with other players. Some of our players haven't had that moment yet, but I look forward to seeing them. But Harry Brown, the question now is, now that Tom Evans has moved to the States, where does he sit on the podium for top men singles players? And I think it's very interesting because players, probably, especially the open scene, they probably have a bit of an internal hierarchy of where everyone sits, and the public will have their own opinion. We as media pundits, I suppose, have a bit of an idea as well. I don't think rankings or Dupa or whatever really matter here. For me, it comes down to this player in prime condition versus this player in prime condition. Who's going to win? Harry Brown had a lights out experience this finals. If he continues to carry that, you know, like, will we see him take on international prospects? Will we see him go overseas and play really well? Tom has done that. So it's like, is Harrison in that category where he can start? You know, we see the likes of a George or a Joey, Mitch Hargraves, these guys are now playing frequently overseas. I think for Harrison, that's the next step if he really wants to get into that conversation.
Yeah. Ash, it's a really good paradigm when we bring up, you know, Harry Brown vanquishing Tom Evans. Tom Evans has got the opportunity as a contracted player over in the PPA, but it does beg the question, like, how good is the male talent here in Australia, and what is it going to take for some of our other Australians to go overseas and do what Tom's doing?
Yeah, well, they should certainly dip their toes in the water in America. I think particularly Harry Brown and Book, and their level is good enough. They obviously are as good as Tom. Worth noting, Tom really put up a good performance on the weekend, even though he did get the L a couple of times. He had match points. They could have gone either way. And pickleball is just a game of slim margins. So, yeah, I think Harry Brown needs to get his good-looking head over there and see what he can do. In the same breath, I think if Harry's going to take advantage of the pickleball scene, we need to get to know that guy a bit more. I think if he can add a personality to his skill set, then he could be a marketer's dream. So you can't force that kind of stuff. You've got to be who you are, but he should try and let the pickleball scene into the person that he is, because we'd all love to get to know him a bit better.
Well, boys, before we wrap, let's talk about what next season could look like for NPL, because there has been some speculation over the weekend that they might be going from six teams per state down to four teams and maybe even condensing the rounds. Dylan, you might have some more information. I don't think anything's been confirmed, but nothing's off the table by the sounds of the NPL.
Yeah, so I reached out to Ron Schell from NPL specifically about this. I always try to get information from whoever the organisers of the tournament are. The problem with hearsay is it's usually from people that have no idea what they're talking about. So you just go directly straight to the source. Ron gave me a no comment. So I respect the gentleman. There's probably legal stuff too. They can't just go and say things as it may affect contracts, etc. So I understand that. But we've been told to say it's all on the NPL website, and that's publicly found information. I still haven't gone over to the website, but Ash did bring up on the Green Zone that there was information there that may back up what you're saying, Adam.
Yeah, no, I was just hearing that from the anonymous texter. So I was getting lots of texts from this person who reckon they got their information from the NPL website.
If they were to go from six teams per state down to four, we've already seen the talent this year in NPL has been enhanced by the signing of the likes of Joey Wild, Danielle Townsend, Summerdale of Honour, Mikhail, Selena Chujulia. It's definitely grown. Now, if they do go to four teams, that just makes it even tighter for spots, captaincy spots as well. That would be very interesting to see who's going to lose, dare I say, a captaincy. The way that the current finals works, right, is nine teams fly to Melbourne. The bottom three in each state, they play off for the final two spots. In fairness, that's a great way to do it. But do we suffer a little bit from not necessarily having the absolute best teams across all regions come to the finals because there's no cross-pollination tournament during the rounds, if that makes sense? So proposing would be, is there a way that the New South Wales, Queensland and Victorian teams meet mid-season to play off against each other so that when we go to the finals, we might have four teams come from Queensland and only two from Victoria and three from New South Wales? But would that be a better way to make sure that we're getting the absolute best talent, the best product for finals?
I don't think so. I think you want to have that state component. I also don't think that there is the depth, definitely not in Victoria, to have, let's just say we've got four to six teams from Queensland or New South Wales vying out in the NPL finals. I don't know if we're there yet. But to go into what you were saying at the start, if it is a condensed group of teams, you say there's four teams, I would like to see that. I think there's a lot of fringe players in the NPL that are not at the standard. And I don't know about you, but I felt like I was waiting for Saturday afternoon at the NPL finals to start, or at least Saturday morning with minus the adders, waiting to see what might happen, because the rest is just making up the numbers.
Yeah, I think sort of touching on what you're talking about, Adam, with a mid-season, you almost make it sound like an FA Cup.
Kind of. We'll put it this way. The Adders wouldn't be there, boys.
Yep.
I would imagine that an Opals would actually take their spot. I don't know what the structure looks like, right? I don't know how to do it fairly. But there's a weighting of talent in Queensland, which is superior to, say, Victoria. But the way that the finals work is the best three teams from each state get to come and play. Now, if you're saying, Ash, that Saturday morning was a little bit of a snooze fest because the results were predictable because, you know, it's David versus Goliath, but Goliath wins, well, then I wouldn't disagree in some of those encounters. So is there a way to actually make sure that, you know, we can get a more feisty finals matchup because we're allowing the best teams across all three states to better synthesize themselves all the way through to the finals?
I think, you know, we had the Brisbane PWR 700 mid-season. So whether this is feasible for the players, whether this is feasible for NPL, it would have been really cool to do almost a round in the middle of that tournament because
yep.
that's almost like, there's your FA Cup. We could have, like, yep. let's just say, I'm going to chuck a theoretical out there. If you are currently fourth in Queensland, you verse fourth place from each other state.
Love it.
So stuff like that. Because then all of a sudden, bang, we've got the Heat v. the Outback, or at that point in time would have been Brumbies, take on the 29ers. And you're like, fuck, this is Christmas. So like, this is sort of stuff yep. that I think, you know, and the thing is the NPL guys, I give them mad credit because they experiment with stuff all the time. This is the sort of stuff that they might be like, hey, let's run with that. I think I agree with Ash in the overall ladder. Don't change it. It's a product that works. Victoria might be on the weaker end at the moment, but it's a professional sport. It's going to have ebbs and flows. It won't be long before they're a powerhouse. Queensland currently on top. Queensland currently on top, or New South Wales currently on top. That's for now. I did bring up the NBA example to Ash on the Green Zone in that the West is always considered stronger than the East. In this point in time, Queensland's currently stronger, theoretically, than other states, but that won't last long. I think don't change the overall ladder, but potentially have a mid-tournament or a tournament that's mid-season where we can have the 3v3v3 because in a round, they play two games anyway. Food for thought.
Yeah, I guess it's just about how realistic it is scheduling-wise to get all teams together. Do you tack it on to the back or the start of an NPL tournament? Maybe you could play for a bonus point or a couple of bonus points that go towards the ladder. Look, going back to, let's just say there are four teams for season four. I think that favors someone or a state like Victoria because all the cream rises to the top and you might just get a flash in the pan or a lightning bolt team pop up. I mean, you could get someone like Vuk with, I don't know, Amy Munro and Izzy Papajan, and then who knows, if the draft goes your way, it might not be Sahil Dang, but you know, some of these up-and-comers, and then they may dominate because the very best of Victoria is good enough, but there's not as many as Queensland.
Yeah. And I think you kind of have a strong feeling as to how depleted Victoria is going to now become with the loss of Tom and Helena, Ash, and how much of a setback that might be, but your comment just now is you think they've actually got some depth, but clearly they're going to be behind New South Wales and Queensland going forward.
Think if we're calling a spade, the depth that they're lacking is with the women. I think the Queensland women and New South Wales, they just bat deeper. I'd like to see more up-and-comers join the NPL, but the only people I can see coming through from Div 2 at the moment, Amy Munro and Nat Fisher.
Yeah. Question, did it bug you throughout the season that players were picked who captain probably knew that they didn't have 100% availability, or maybe in the captain's defense, they were unaware that certain players would have some unavailability? Did it bug you, and what can we do about it?
This is a problem with Australian pickleball. It's not just an NPL issue. Like, we see Major League have the exact same problems. And I don't know how you go about it. For me, it just comes down to what's the priority of the players. And we talk about the professional aspect of this sport. People need to stop treating this like a rec sport and start treating it like a business. this is your money. This is your portfolio. You're trying to build a product. And I've brought this up in the past with both NPL and MLPA. Does anyone actually care about the teams? There's no cultural identity. And I understand it's new. This is going to take time. But we should be building this legacy now. You should be proud to want to represent the Outback or a Bondi, something like that, you know?
Well, that's because it resets at the end of every season. And that team that you were representing dies, really. So it's a reset. And yeah, I don't know if there's a discussion piece around having more permanent teams and you've signed on to that team for X amount of seasons, then you would have some real buy-in to some team culture.
Well, last little discussion piece before we must wrap it up, boys. You talk about professionalism, Dylan, and I know that this is a conversation that we've had offline a number of times, but I feel like we're really delving strongly now with these professional leagues in Australia, the players participating in them, the players that are chomping at the bit for opportunities. Some players get gifted opportunities because, you know, organizations will pick them as captain per se or favor them in some ways. I want to talk about how players are taking criticism on court, more so than off court, but their performance is what people like us are really critiquing. I think we can all agree that we've heard from players privately who don't necessarily agree with their opinion, and that's okay, but not when it's not justified by the results that we're seeing on court. Ash, your take firstly?
Yeah, for sure, mate. Results speak louder than anything, and the people who are sensitive to commentary are the ones who maybe aren't taking it professionally. They're the fringe players and they're doing it so they can upload some fun clips to their Instagram and make friends. I know someone in the NPL who's, even after the finals, was talking about what a great bunch of people the opposition were and how friendly they were. I mean, that's fine to make friends, but as long as you're playing with intensity and passion when the cash is on the line. So I just feel like the people who are sensitive are the fringe players. The top players don't really care because they understand that it comes with the territory and that the bigger pickleball gets in Australia, the more people will understand that what we're dealing with at the moment in terms of having some commentary on the sport is like not even 1% of what any other sport in Australia deals with. Honestly, like DK and I are super tame.
Dylan?
Yeah, Ash has nailed it. And it's probably a bit of a wake-up call. We're almost, you know, we haven't got the oven on 180 yet. We're sitting at about 35 because the reality of professional broadcasting in any sport or any industry, you look at musicians or actresses, etc., they get hounded. They hate the media. And, you know, our players are quite lucky that our media apparatuses are quite friendly. You know, like the commentary is quite friendly. You guys in Slam Jam are quite friendly. Beyond the Court are obviously very friendly. There will be more media people coming through, guys, and they're going to be assholes. You wait till we get actual journalists coming in. You get done for doing Adderall on the court or something, bang, sudden scandal. Pickleball Australia will dread these sort of incidents happening. You know, this Vuk situation we've just talked about with him getting a red card, in the AFL, that is a week-long news cycle where the family gets hounded. You know, you're not having your external things affected by your decisions on court. And it's probably a good thing that we are slowly bringing this in. Because obviously if Ash and I were to go full ball and just start talking about nonsense, it would be too much. But it's a good thing.
100% DK. And I think Ash, anything that you and I have said, I mean, it's all contextual. We're not just flying. And that's what's great about broadcasting with you or any duo is usually you're held accountable to, hey, mate, I think you've gone a bit far there, but we have an open discussion. And, you know, I was speaking to a player yesterday who I won't name him. And he goes, oh, you know, you've been attacking me on the broadcast. And I said, not at all. I mean, I actually just want to see you reach your potential. I'm just calling it as I see it. And I stand by everything I said. It's all contextual. If you can pick out one thing that you think was too far, I'm happy to have a chat with you about it. But yeah, I'm happy to stand by everything I've said. It's not malicious. It's not like unwarranted. We're just commenting on the holistic landscape of pickleball and some players in particular. And here's another thing. If we are mentioning your name, guess what? There's something positive about that too. You're playing professional pickleball. You're in the mix and you're in the discussion. If we didn't mention you at all, there's a problem.
Yeah, boys, I actually think we flatter these players a bit too much by even calling them all professional pickleballers. There is a large element of them that are not professional, and it's completely flattering to think that they are. This is not a full-time job for them. The ones that flat out just do pickleball, they live at bloody home. You're not making a living off pickleball. And guess what? If you're lucky enough one day to make a living off this sport, criticism is going to be part of the journey that gets you there. I think someone like Tom and Helena are actually in the best possible shape to deal with criticism that'll come their way naturally. I think Helena's already copped it over there. It's part and parcel of it. If you're going to take the money off the table, guys, and if you're going to be broadcast on a publicly available platform like YouTube, then criticism is part of the deal. Get used to it.
That's it. And another thing on that. So the reason why it's more palpable in America is because there's more money on the table. As soon as we start having more money here in Australia, then yeah, we're going to have more commentary, more opinions. And as you say, Adam, get used to it.
And look, don't get lost in the fact that we don't always say negative things. Things will just stand out. I mean, I had a little clip that I put together and I had a conversation with Andy Horridge. Jay Grewal didn't tap paddles with Andy. And I can tell you for a fact, Jay wasn't happy with that. We had a conversation and that's fine. But I said to him, I said, mate, if you're not going to tap paddles on a broadcast, it's going to stand out. I'm not trying to create any drama. That's there. It lives there now forever. It just is the way it is, you know? So yeah, just be mindful of your behavior and your actions and maybe actually start working better with the media. And it all starts with your own social media platforms. A lot of these players aren't really doing a good job of selling themselves and promoting pickleball in general. If you want more than you've got now, it's time to do more. Right, boys. Well, I reckon we've had a red hot chat, but yeah, I wanted to obviously discuss all the NPL. Hats off to you boys. Hats off to the NPL for putting together, you know, the product that they have with the Green Zone. It definitely lived up to, you know, all the potential and it definitely delivered, especially in that last round, especially in Victoria. You know, I know you had the split view going and the hype and the build up around which team is going to make it, which teams aren't. That was spectacular. And then into the finals. Yeah, it was a great job. Well done to you both.
Thanks, buddy. And thank you to DK for holding my hand during the broadcast. It's been a lot of fun broadcasting with DK and been fun on this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Adam. And Ash, you're a natural at it, mate, as I say to a lot of people that I commentate with. So it's a lot easier than people realize.
You know what's funny, DK? I was talking to a mate of mine who is an AFL reporter at Fox Footy. And this was on Sunday. And I said, you know, I've got to commentate the pickleball finals for the NPL. And I said, one of the players or a couple of the players are upset. And he goes, how could they be upset? How are they even watching it? You know, you're commentating live. And that's when I said, you know, they go back and watch it on YouTube and then they get a bit sensitive. And he thought I was joking. He thought it was a joke. He's like, that can't be like pickleball players getting offended. It sounds a little bit comical, but I think sometimes we just need to take a step back and have a bit of a laugh. It is a professional sport, but we, as we've touched on, we're only just scratching the surface.
Well, boys, season 4 doesn't kick off too long. I think you've mentioned before, Dylan, all the details are on the website. So it'll be interesting to see what the format might be, whether it'll change or not. But we'll look forward to it and we'll see you boys on the Green Zone in the season 4.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. Looking forward to the top.